And now for something completely different.
It's a rich man's world. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal. The full story. Real talk about money, markets, life. Now, it's The Real Investment Show. Presented by RIA Advisors.
And welcome to the Friday edition, Financial Fitness Friday of the Real Investment Show. I'm Rich Rosso, Certified Financial Planner, here with Danny Ratliff, Certified Financial Planners Squared. And we're here to talk about a lot of different things today. And one is, of course, the market. You know, we've sort of been, we sort of peaked, got a little bit overdone, overheated. Start to pull back here a little bit, which is customary before you hit the holiday. And so just sort of treading water here. You know, obviously, we're still up in the air with trade talks. We don't really understand what's going on there. We seem to get that proverbial carrot that gets dangled that we're going to get a deal, and then we don't get a deal. So obviously, markets are anticipating that. But just sort of... Not interested. Interested in anything until there's some news for the markets to be interested in.
You ever read the book Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne? Do you remember that?
Yeah,
I sure do.
They put the big A for an adulterer. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a mark of shame. Do you know what that big A is in the financial industry?
T.
You put a big T for traitor, right? And so it's interesting the stigma surrounding with actually selling something in the financial industry. You know, everybody, we talk about this frequently, that everybody knows how to buy something, but most people don't have a strategy to get out, that exit strategy. But the moment you buy or you sell or you, you know, take advantage of dips in prices or maybe changes in the overall economic landscape, you're deemed a trader. And even at that, sometimes day trader.
How dare you?
Yeah. So a really interesting kind of observation is that Scarlet T. And really, you know, what we hope to do here is kind of give you an idea as far as what that means and as far as being a trader or actually selling something.
I think the industry wants to make you feel guilty. I had someone that called a broker and no trades all year to sell a stock and buy another one.
Yeah.
Are you a trader now? It is amazing because of this moniker you're given or this letter that you're giving, just because you may take control of your own investments and sell something and buy something else, or how dare you ask an opinion about something that you own. Like, why did we buy this? Like, why do we own XYZ company? Why do we still own this? You know, it is your right to ask the question. Now, again, there are people who trade every day, and they may rack up so many trades, especially now that there's no commission, okay? But for the most part, if you're working with a money manager, risk management to make trades, take profits, move away from losers, rebalance, this is all part of what you're supposed to do, okay? When you buy an investment, you eventually have to sell an investment. You don't buy an investment just buy it, right? In other words, you have a goal. It's a price target. You hopefully have done research. You have to fund something, right? There's a harvest time of your life for investments. It could be college, right? You have a 529. Now you're taking money out, right? That's liquidating the investment and using the cash. You're in retirement and you need to recreate a paycheck, right? You are allowed to make a sale. You are allowed to ask questions about investments that you own. And I find that investors seem very intimidated, or they just don't want to rock the boat to ask questions. And it puzzles me. And in this industry, Lance gets deemed a trader many times, and he's not. Okay, I've known Lance 15 years. When we build portfolios, we work around edges. If something's not working, yes, we have parameters to buy and sell. But for the most part, we are trimming profits and investments, profits and sectors, right?
Or getting out altogether based on the economic landscape. I mean, there's lots of things to change, right?
But we're not actually going in there every day to trade just for ticks, you know, moves in a stock price. That's and again, people who do that, that's fine. I have nothing against that.
I think it's important to understand that maybe a little background, yeah, too, is that, you know, when we place trades, there's no commissions involved as far as what we receive, right? And so there are guys out there that do receive commissions for trading. Now, so you'll hear those guys and you hear from them from time to time. And I think, you know, one of the things that you mentioned was that, you know, people feel maybe afraid to call somebody or their advisor and say, hey, you know, question on a trade. They say, what are you a trader? Well, it's probably because they haven't thought of this first. So what happens, we see, is that the buy and hold strategy is a lazy man strategy. And I know there's lots of people out there that actually have an advisor. They've sold you some stocks or mutual funds or ETFs or whatever it may be. And then they will not make a change unless you call them or you sit down face to face.
Right.
Very seldom do you get guys that are actually going to be very proactive with portfolio management. And that's there's a lot of problems with that, because as the economic landscape shifts and changes quickly, as we've seen just in the last, you know, couple years, you need to be able to adapt and make moves.
The biggest thing, even for us when I started, was the fact that people were sold mutual funds for a load charge.
Yep.
But I was amazed by advisors that never changed the funds, even when they fell to the bottom quartile and stayed there, never made a change, never rebalanced a portfolio. So if you wanted to be 50% in stocks and now you were 80, nobody looked again.
But Rich, that doesn't matter. You can't time these things. And you know what? You just don't know what's going to work. So you need to buy them all. Right? I mean, that's what you hear.
But that is really what it is. It's a cop out to say, I need to own every asset class, every industry, and so forth. And if something goes wrong...
And it will.
Listen, you can't blame me. I was in everything. Well, you just blame the market. So it really takes responsibility off of your advisor.
Well, it allows them to go sell something else.
Well, and again, there are advisors, and we know a lot of good ones, who actually do spend time managing the portfolio and watching trends and doing the right thing. But let me tell you, you're going to go to a big box financial place and invest your money, it's going to be thrown into an allocation and it's set and forget. And I will tell you, that's worked. There are periods or cycles that will absolutely work for you.
This year's one of them, right?
Well, the last decade has worked for you. Okay.
Yeah.
But eventually it's not. And when it doesn't, remember one thing. To a stock, to the market, to anybody who represents the market and not you, it's going to come back. Markets always come back. Okay? Markets are infinite. They will come back. That is not an untrue statement. It's the amount of time it will take to recover. And you may not have that time. Right?
That's absolutely right.
So that's the problem you have, is who is the financial partner representing, the firm and the market, or you? And that is very important. When you work with a fiduciary, it's about you. So if you want to place a trade and you've done your research, listen, people that just go buy stuff because their friend said to buy it, well, you deserve what you get. That is luck. And let me say that every investment is a leap of faith. You can do all the homework in the world, buy an investment, own a stock, and the next day it gets cut in half. You do not know. The homework at least gives you some edge. But listen, once you make an investment, it is a leap of faith. But there are people that just listen to somebody else, yep, and they got to buy it. Even though I say, well, when you ask the question why, they don't have any answers, as opposed to some people that I work with that have brokerage accounts elsewhere, and they say, well, I want to buy XYZ. And I'm like, well, give me the reasons. And they give me the reason. I'm like, you know what? Those are really good reasons. You've actually have done your homework.
Yeah.
But don't be deemed a trader just because you ask a question, just because you want to sell something you're not comfortable with, just because you buy something that you've done the homework and you believe in. That does not make you a trader, okay? Or a traitor.
I don't know if it's trader or traitor. Yeah.
To the broker.
Trading's not bad, but like you said, have that reason to sell as well. So don't do it based on emotion. Do it based on the actual facts. So many times when you've talked to the neighbor and they say, hey, look, I'm an XYZ, it's gone up, you know, 50%, and then you go jump in. Well, guess what? you missed out on all those gains. You may not see that. That momentum
may
continue.
May or may not, to your point.
You know, so you need to find those reasons and make sure that this is an investment that's suitable for you at this stage and at this time, right? And then you need to know how to get out.
And again, even if you want to place money in over time, you probably don't have commissions anymore. So it's easy for you to say, I want to put $10,000 into this individual investment. Well, if it looks like it's richly priced and so forth, well, maybe you just start with $2,000. See how it goes. No one says you have to invest everything all at once. That's another thing that people seem to don't understand is when they go to sit with a financial person on a Monday and they give them a check, on Wednesday, everything's invested.
Yeah, it doesn't have to work.
They don't even
way.
Look at anything. Just throw it in there. And again, there are going to be cycles where that is going to work. But that's not any kind of market prowess or knowing more than anybody else. That is sheer luck and momentum and the cycle you're in. That is it. Remember, when you deal with the market, you have to be very humble. You have to realize that, and I see it on, I sent Lance, someone put something on Facebook. On my Facebook, I had to send it to him, snapshot.
Okay.
I said, this is what it's come to, where someone said, look, it's so easy to make money in the stock market. A two-year-old can do it. That was what this individual posted. When you get that kind of hubris, when you are that overconfident, you are setting yourself up. Danny and I have been doing this a long time. We spent a lot of time making sure that we know the market can humble us and take us down at any minute. And that's very, very important. Hey, when we get back, we're going to talk about a lot of things, some financial planning rules and some other stuff. We hope you enjoy. Again, you're listening to The Real Investment Show on 700 KSEV, The Voice of Texas. Stay tuned for our last segment.
Catch the best of The Real Investment Show anytime, anywhere from Stitcher Smart Radio. Download podcasts of The Real Investment Show from Stitcher.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
Welcome back. You know, if you don't believe that a majority of Americans are having a tough time saving for retirement, the median account balance for those 50 to 59 years old is around $63,000. Part of the problem is, and this is a recent Bankrate study, the problem I have with, well, I have a lot of problems with 401ks and variable asset retirement accounts, but most important is all the ways that you could take money out of your 401ks, hardship withdrawals, you're buying your first-time home buyer to avoid the penalty, all this junk that we get to do that. We call that leakage. With pension money, where money is being put aside, you can't touch it, right? You should really not be able to touch 401ks, although I do like one of these new initiatives that I don't know if it's going to happen, where you can withdraw to pay for your long-term care insurance completely tax-free and penalty-free, because that to us is the financial elephant in the room as far as long-term care costs when you need help with activities of daily living. I see every day and talk to people every day the toll that this takes on caregivers, family caregivers who need to take care of parents, and their health is suffering dramatically. So when Bankrate did this study, about 51% of households, say earning $30,000 to about $49,999, had taken money early. In other words, the more money you have saved or the more income you have, it seems like you're doing a better job of taking early withdrawals where you're not doing it. So this problem we have, I think, in the industry, Danny, is we push people, push to save in a 401k before we have them, say, get their financial deck in order overall, don't you think? In other words, like, why would I have to tap my 401k to buy a home? First of all, what is that saying about me being able to afford a home if I have to take my down payment out of my retirement account? Second, why don't I have an emergency reserve set up first, right? So there's a priority or a hierarchy of how you create a financial foundation, especially when you're first starting out.
Rich, I think this is a little bit of a conundrum in many ways, because everyone is pushed to put those funds in the 401k prior to building up that emergency fund. And I think a lot of it is, one, because it's so easy. You know, you go online, you look at your payroll, you make the changes, you can change your contribution rate very easily. It is less accessible. So a lot of times, you know, you see people, you start to build that emergency fund, life happens, you have to pull money out, and next thing you know, it's not there. It is that emergency fund, but you don't have anything else there, and you're just in that hamster wheel trying to put more money aside. And so I think for many advisors or even the big institutions who have these 401ks, it's a lot easier to say, hey, put the money here. And unfortunately, there is that hierarchy of where you should put funds, right?
Yeah, because when you have 50% of the people that Bankrate surveyed taking early withdrawals for some reason or another, something's wrong.
Oh, yeah. Something's way wrong. Uh-huh. And you look at it, here we are again, where it used to be, you know, you had to have 20% down to go buy a home. And I loved that, because it actually made people stick within some parameters on, you know, the price of a home that you can afford.
And that's our rule here. Yeah. At RIA, we have very select financial guidelines on how much debt you need to take, how much mortgage you can afford. And we don't budge on it. And you want to break that, you come in and you want advice, this is the advice we give you. You don't like to hear it, but we want to make sure you're doing the right thing.
Well, so you hear these stories of somebody says, well, I can afford a $2 million house. Great. Okay. Well, maybe on paper you can, but should you? Probably not. And then you guys think about all the other, can you pay that mortgage? Great. But all the other additional expenses that come with that home. And then you don't have the emergency fund because you've taken all of your assets and put them aside into this illiquid asset, so to speak. But now you're seeing where people are getting loans for 5% down, very little. And it's unfortunate, because it does get us into that mindset that it's okay to go out and get that bigger home. You deserve it. You know, you work hard. I get it. But at the end of the day, it's about how much you can keep in your pocket. And this is a difficult time, because you're putting funds in the 401k and this is designed for retirement, yet you don't have the savings. There is a bigger issue here.
Now, not that I'm advocating this, but I do advocate putting money in Roth. But when you put money in a Roth 401k, you're putting in at least after-tax contributions.
That's right.
So if you did need to tap that part of the money, you can, right? It's after-tax. You've already paid taxes. So at least you're not getting, you know, slammed with that. But to your point, it's just too easy to take money out of a 401k. And sometimes you have, you know, as advisors, we have to tell people, listen, you cannot put money into the retirement account right now, or maybe you can do up to the match in a Roth 401k. But you need to get these other basics in order. And one of those most important basics is the emergency reserve, making sure you have enough cash. Because I met with a great young couple a few weeks ago. I mean, they're just starting out. They're in their early 20s. And they have a great heart. They are doing a lot of the right things. But some of the advice they're getting from other brokers is totally different than what I'm giving them, which sounds more intuitive, like max out your 401k. Well, they don't only have a month worth of living expenses in their retirement account. And they're maybe planning to move and do these other things. And I'm like, no. Why are we maxing out our 401k here?
Yeah.
Right, which is counterintuitive, but this is, you know, before you build a house, you put a foundation down. You want to make sure that everything you do, when that 401k money goes in, you got it in your head here, go, you got it, that door's got to close. Like, I cannot touch this money. What can I do around the periphery that prevents me from touching this money? And that's very, very important to realize. Now, the government's always coming out with ways for you to take more money out of your 401k. Most of them I don't agree with. Like, I do not believe you should take money out of your retirement savings for a home. Doesn't make sense to me, right? But maybe long-term care does. But there's got to be still a strategy to avoid an early withdrawal in your retirement account. We also see when people move money, like they leave the one employer and they go to another. And how many times have you seen this? Well, they'll go, okay, yeah, well, I'm not going to roll it over. I need the money. And they'll go ahead and take the distribution at taxed and penalized at 10%, right? Because they're under 59.5. And I'm like, no cash. I'm cash restrained. I have no cash flow. So this mantra of 401k first, put everything you have, that's a Wall Street story because that's how they make fees. You need a hierarchy of saving and have someone help you fill in those holes of where you are in that hierarchy and then work toward making sure that 401k or that Roth 401k or whatever retirement account you're saving in does not get breached for any reason.
Well, that just goes back to the plan. The plan should help you create that hierarchy,
yes,
right? And
right.
I think that's the difficulty is of doing a plan. I meet with young people and a lot of times they say, you know what? I just can't do a financial plan. I don't know what the future holds. Well, that's exactly right. And here's one thing I tell everybody. This plan is living, breathing. It's going to change. What this is going to allow you is going to allow you to start figuring out where to put funds to make sure, one, you build a solid foundation. Two, you have some flexibility should life happen, which we know it does. And then three, this sets you up for retirement, for your objectives, the goals that you have. Now, put those pipe dreams down. Let's see how we can get you there. But at the end of the day, we want to make sure that, you know, you're safe, secure, and then you have the opportunity for growth as well and the flexibility when you get to retirement that many people just don't have. So, you know, so many people have all their funds tied up in that tax-deferred account because all they've done is stick funds aside in that 401k.
Mm-hmm.
And they still don't, even in their 50s and 60s many times, have the bandwidth. Should something happen, God forbid you lose your job, you have 6 months of expenses or 12 months of expenses, depending on, you know, what your household or your family situation is, that is huge.
That financial flexibility where the first thing you have to do is go right for the 401k. We saw this after the financial crisis, right? And I was hoping, and I sent emails, during that period of time when people were getting laid off, and it looked like they were going to be chronically underemployed or unemployed because it was almost as close to a Great Depression we've had, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you letting people get taxed and penalized on this money when they're already going through financial distress? We should have been able to relieve that process. You allow us to take money out for anything we want for the most part. Why didn't you let us take money out when we were losing our jobs? And so while we're down, you're going to go ahead. So taxpayers had to pay for the whole thing.
Oh, they're bailing everybody else
right,
out.
Right, taxpayers are bailing everybody else out. Then you're sitting at home because you just got laid off. You have no emergency reserve. You had to take money out of your 401k to live. And guess what you've done? Now you're taxed and penalized. That sucked. And it was the worst thing that I ever seen we ever do. And yet I can never still get an answer on it. Don't think I'm not going to bring it up again during the next recession. How dare you?
They're going to say, we need the dues.
Hey, we get back. I got some funny stuff with some other stuff that's bothering me. And we want to talk about the cost of living adjustment for Social Security, how you're getting ripped off. But there's something about Social Security that you are going to love. Yeah, believe it or not, you are. Hey, you're listening to The Real Investment Show here at 700 KSCV, The Voice of Texas. Stay tuned for our next segment, last segment.
Real Investment Show podcasts are now available on iTunes.
Listen anyplace, anytime
at iTunes.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help to determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve it. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
And we are back at the Real Investment Show. Hope you all staying warm. I know we're expecting some cooler weather here in town. I, for one, welcome it. A lot of people, like Clanton, are cursing it.
No. Just enduring it.
He's enduring
That's not so bad.
It's not bad yet. So
as long as you don't have to shovel it off the driveway, I'm fine.
Isn't that the truth?
You know? I mean, I can deal with it.
Yeah, that's very true. Although we did have snow last year. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to shovel it, but it was pretty. Pretty on all the trees. And
it's pretty annoying.
Was that last year? Man. Time is fine.
Brett is like, you know, typical, don't get me anything, anywhere, any kind of precipitation that turns into this white stuff that I have to even look at.
I already miss August.
My goodness. Oh, wow. Dang. Listen, there are some people who love the heat, right?
That's why I live here.
I know. Yeah.
And the humidity is good for your gill slits.
Yeah, I bet it is. So we're talking about all kinds of cool stuff. But one of the observations, which is very true, if you looked at your portfolio yesterday, even though there was all this banter about trade deals and tariffs being removed and new highs, you may have looked at your accounts going, wait a minute, I don't see it. Because really what you saw was a big sector rotation out of sort of dividend stocks, non-cyclicals, into some beaten areas of the market. But most important is something Danny mentioned, was the fact that yields went up and bond prices came down. So your mutual funds and bonds obviously did not perform well. So we're going into this risk-off part of the year. And Lance talked about this. He predicted this very nicely, that we would see this. The 10-year will probably only go so far. In other words, once you breach over 2%, I think it's around 2.1 or so, we would actually look to add bonds to the portfolio. Now, we have been short duration, which means we have been on the short end of the yield curve all year, which hasn't helped us in the beginning of the year, but I think will help us this fourth quarter. But you don't want to be dissuaded, and we talk about this all the time when bonds get beat up. You don't drop your bonds because they're losing some of their capital appreciation. If you own a bond fund, if this continues, your portfolio manager will make some swaps, change out to higher yields. So even though your prices are going down, yields will be going up. And again, interest rates can only go so far. They are a function of economic growth and inflation. We already saw what happened when interest rates started to move higher. What happened to the economy? 30-year mortgage rates hit close to 5%, and you pretty much stopped the darn market. Well, we can't handle rates to go above a certain level before we squash things economically. So
today's actually a very interesting day, Rich. So I'm glad you brought that up. So today marks the market high for the 10-year Treasury over the last couple of years.
Okay.
So November 8th of last year, we hit a high of 3.24 in the 10-year. We've been as low as 1.4 only a couple months back. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing this certainly the rotation, but we saw what happened. If you think back to what happened last quarter, which I know is very easy to forget, is that we actually had one of the worst quarters we've seen since the 1930s.
Absolutely.
It was terrible.
Horrible.
And a lot of that was sparked because of the Fed's verbiage saying, hey, you know, things are great. You know, if you remember back in October of last year, they said, we're a long ways from neutral was the verbiage.
That's right.
Meaning that
he was very hawkish.
We thought there's going to be a lot more growth. And what I think it equated to, we talked about what does that mean from a perspective of growth. He was implying like 6% GDP. Which we were way, way off from. So then October was down 10%. We get into November, and rates had really started roaring right there. And he kind of he went back and reiterated that same thing. And then he comes back and says, after we saw rates and then nothing seemed to work, he said, hey, guys, whoa, we're actually wrong. We're not as, we're not seeing the growth. So we're gonna hang tight for the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty interesting because the market had a good little week in there, right? I think this week of last year. And then all of a sudden, rates started dropping. The market didn't quite believe it all. And we got all the way through Christmas, and it was just a rough time. Now, and a lot of that's based on what you just mentioned, that 5% we saw in 30-year mortgages. We saw things slow down. Mm-hmm. Things were coming to a grind. We also have to remember there's a ton of debt out there.
That's right.
So we see this revolving debt, interest rates increase. We see companies who had to refinance as debt comes due. These are all going to be bigger issues longer term. So right now, though, we may be actually be given a gift because we have seen a global synchronized convoy with central bankers in the sense of trying to reduce rates. Like, we see negative interest rates. Christine Lagarde, who's taken over Mario Draghi at the ECB, former head of IMF, mm-hmm. you know, they're talking about this is a good thing.
Oh, they think negative rates is the best thing ever because it saved an economy when it really is a sign of something is incredibly busted in the system when you have negative rates.
Well, there's a lot of things like that that mm-hmm. are going to be bad. And so if you are a politician, negative rates are they probably feel pretty good about it, right? Mm-hmm. Because they get to borrow money or money in. It's a lot cheaper. Mm-hmm. And so why do you think Trump floated the idea a month or so ago of 50-year and 100-year bonds?
That's right.
And he's on the Fed to reduce rates.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of a sudden, man, deficit looks a heck of a lot better, doesn't it?
Absolutely. We have totally ignored debt. And again, I know we print our own currency in the United States, but debt or increasing debt levels, I don't care if it's on the corporate level, on the sovereign or the government level or the household level, that does portend to lower growth.
That's right.
And we are seeing that. We are still, in the United States, the cleanest dirty shirt, and that means that we do have a better growth rate, closer to 2% on GDP, than other economies. But this is the new average versus over 3% or over 3%.
You just can't see that anymore.
Which we don't see. And part of that is this debt burden that we all carry. And everybody has gotten, including corporations especially, sort of addicted to these low rates. You have benchmarked now to low rates. I don't know if you've seen the Twitter fight between William Shatner.
Oh,
no. My gosh. Because I guess if you're a baby boomer, the negative connotation is if a boomer's like telling younger generation, like, Danny, you got to go out there and get a job. You know, you're lazy. And you come back to me and go, oh, boomer, you know, because you're trying to say that, you know, boomers are out of it. They have no idea what's going on. And there was this whole Twitter fight with William Shatner beating up on these millennials and the millennials beating up on. I mean, he went into this.
I've got to see this.
This whole thing. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but it was relating to this story. Okay. In other words, the millennials are busting on the boomers for ruining the economy. Like, you took us to all these levels, extravagance and all that, and we can't partake in that. And what's happened is everybody's gotten used to living at these lower conditions of rates. In other words, it's a boomer would go to the millennial. Hey, I remember when, because he was talking about this, Shatner, double-digit interest rates. Y'all remember that? You know, and then he did sound like some old crotchety guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's sitting on the deck of the Enterprise going, you know. But he's right in the fact that boomers paid what in mortgage rates? 9, 10, 12, 15%.
Well, that's terrible, right? Because the baby boomers got the short end of the stick here because they had to pay those high interest rates. Now you've actually accumulated funds.
And it's hard to get interest rates to earn anything. Yeah, no, absolutely. So everybody's gotten more conditioned to have mortgage rates closer to 4%. And as soon as rates start to go higher, then we see a pullback because even though we have seen an increase in labor growth as far as wages, I personally believe that has peaked. And we will now fall back to trend. And that's what we tend to do. We tend to fall back into this muck. Because even as much as we want to be the cleanest dirty shirt, we are still part of a global economic society. And if they go down, we sort of go down. We don't go down as much, but with debt and with lower with conditions going on, we are in a lower growth phase. And part of it is demographics and other things. It's not really in any kind of government's control or central bank's
control. That's right. You have a big demographic issue. But, you know, when you look across the pond and you see what's going on overseas, they are lowering interest rates. So going back from where November last year was the highest we've seen in the 10-year,
mm-hmm.
it's also we've seen interest rates have been flying down globally. You also have some economies that are slipping into recession or already there. Germany, Italy. You look at a lot of these European nations that are having a lot of issues. So, you know, going back to this interest rates of where we see right now, this could be a good opportunity. You actually have the ability to go out and trade bonds, which historically has been difficult to do, meaning that mm-hmm. you could go in and be short duration. Now, as things have gotten higher, you could go buy a little bit longer with the expectation
look at it as a buying opportunity. Don't get so discouraged by this. So don't get all wrapped up, right to your point, that bond yields are going up. Because if you're in the market for individual bonds, especially around 2%, you might find more attractive rates, or you might go out more duration. So don't get discouraged that your bonds aren't growing at this point. They might just be providing you better yields. You don't want to make knee-jerk reactions based on how these algorithms pull money in and out of sectors and asset classes. That's the last thing you want to do. Because what we could find that this is all a very big head fake, because I believe next year is going to be a way different story, especially during a horrific political cycle where parties are just everything they think is out there in social media, and the market is going to trade on every bit of it. And I'm talking about both sides being ugly. And that is going to whipsaw your portfolio. So you need to keep a level head and don't get whipsawed with it. And we will be keeping track of the bigger trends, as we talk about it already, as we move forward into next year. But to your point, we always say this, right? Don't forsake your bonds just because they're not growing like your stocks. Because we have had, I think the AG, which is the long-term bondings index, is up close to 10%.
Yeah, it's like 9, 10, right around there.
That's not supposed to happen. Bonds are not supposed to grow like that. So this will pull back, but there will be a peak to this. So if you need any help, any questions about the portfolio, we are available for you, objectively and as fiduciaries, to help. Hey, when we get back, we want to talk about the IRS updates rules on retirement plan hardship distributions. What the heck does that mean to you here at The Real Investment Show on 700 KCV, the voice of Texas? We'll be right back. Very superstitious.
Let it back to fall. Get daily investment news you can use. Delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for the Real Investment Report now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlock. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
Let's go!
And welcome back to the last segment of The Real Investment Show. I'm Rich Rosso here with Danny Ratliff, Mr. Clanton, pressing all his buttons and making things happen. And we are done with our lunch and learns for this year. Next year, we have an exciting, I think pretty cool foray of topics. I mean, Medicare, Social Security, long-term care.
Ooh,
my gosh, there's so many. I mean, we focus on all these topics, financial planning rules, investment rules. Especially, I think next year, we're going to need some of these to maybe make appearances where they shouldn't be, only because of the volatility we might see next year. So we have great success with our lunch and learns. Danny will eventually be doing those out in the Woodlands, but we do our retirement right lane class. Those also will be coming up on first Saturdays every month around town. And those are our 2-hour classes. And we cover pretty much what you need to do to prepare for retirement and make sure you're not blindsided.
Lots of good information there. That's one place that you can go is realinvestmentadvice.com. Mm-hmm. Go to the events tab, check out what we have going on. It's going to look a little light. Just because the holidays are coming up, we tend to take some time off the agenda there as far as the educational seminars and workshops. So if you have suggestions, things you guys want to hear about, maybe something you want us to talk about on the show, don't hesitate to go to Real Investment Advice and ask a question. We'd love to help you guys out, either answer you directly or answer you here on air.
I'm really disappointed that you kiboshed our December lunch and learn idea, how to build a gingerbread house.
Hey, man.
And then you can eat it after you're done.
My kids can teach it. I mean,
free refreshments.
He just wants the eggnog. What are you talking about?
Why didn't I think of this? Like a gingerbread man and a gingerbread house building kind of lunch and learn.
Rich would be having how to make candy canes. How do you decorate your house? Uh-huh. What else would you do? Let's see.
How to really front load your eggnog with
that's not very hard
rum
to do.
And other good stuff. Yes.
So you're a rum guy in the eggnog?
It's eggnog season. Yes. Yeah.
Rich could do a whole course on kitchen chemistry.
Oh, yeah. Around holiday time. Mulled wine. That's another great one. I should bring some in for everybody. Not during the show because...
Yeah, it'd be pretty entertaining.
You know, we never know what'll go out over the air.
So, wound up sounding like Sebastian Gorka.
One of these days, I'm going to get him to do the whole show in that character.
Yeah, that would be fun.
You would do that too. You know, the I don't know if anybody's seen the unicorn puppy, but the abandoned puppy who was born with the extra tail on his forehead. Have you seen that, Brent? It doesn't wag or anything, but this is the cutest, oddest thing I've really ever seen. But
this unicorn puppy.
Yeah, this is a Missouri group that has now taken in the puppy and has a congenital defect. So, you know, dogs can get this. They can get cleft extra toes, cleft palates. He's got this little tail coming out of his forehead. So he's being known as the unicorn pup.
They're going to probably find a way to breed him here before you know it.
I think most...
I got nothing. It's like, really?
They might want to use it for all the Medicare Advantage commercials.
Yeah.
Because while other people are watching all their wonderful shows, I'm looking at, wow, that was a pretty good Medicare commercial. Wow, that one would really convince me. I said, I'm going to get a free Fitbit. You know, you got to be really, really careful, even though this is Medicare enrollment season, because of the stuff they're giving away. And you got to really look at the benefits.
You know the dog commercials where they've got the talking dogs and make their mouths and lips move?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they could do that commercial in the voice of Sebastian Gorka as the dog.
We're never going to let this go. Sebastian Gorka, by the way, is also... It's a long story. Just look him up. We were thinking of having him cut a right lane class commercial.
I think it's kind of awesome.
Yeah, I know.
Do you want to be blindsided in retirement? You must come to the right lane class. Held by RIA, or you will die.
So Medicare premium increases, back on a serious note. So we talk about the base premiums for Medicare Part B. We've been talking about that. It's going to go up next year to $144.60. That's up from $135.50. So that's a $9 hike overall. Now, Part B also has a deductible. When you buy Medigap, which is what we recommend, which is supplemental coverage. Because keep in mind, when you look at Medicare, unless you're buying Medicare Advantage, but there are a whole bunch of issues there. We write a lot about Medicare Advantage. When you buy Medicare, when you got A and B, you are getting Swiss cheese. You need other insurance to fill the holes. It used to be that the annual deductible for Medicare Part B was covered with F, the Medigap policy. Now, you will have to pay that Medicare Part B.
Yeah, with Part G, because F's going away. But, you know, even that, it's not astronomical. It's $185. I mean, that's going to be the biggest difference.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. But, again, we have to keep in mind that there's going to be different changes for all these different things. We're going to be looking at six income tiers for high-income surcharges for Part B and Part D. People don't realize that there's something called a base premium for Medicare, like the $135 or now the $144.60 next year.
Yep.
But that can change. Right,
I think that's what blindsides so many people is that you get in here and you say, okay, hey, this is what my Medicare premiums are. But then all of a sudden you get a knock on the door or a note and says, hey, by the way, you had some IRMA charges, right? And so essentially what that is, it's a surcharge for making too much money. So currently this year, it's if you make $85,000 as an individual, you know, with income or over 170, it's going to go up to 174 and then 87 for an individual. So those numbers, and basically what this means to you is that if you have more income than that, then you will be assessed an additional charge for your Medicare. And that's going to go anywhere from $220.40 per month all the way up to $491.60. So why that's important is because that's not just for you. Now, if you're married, that's for you and your spouse. So, you know, our job, which I tell people frequently, is not just the wealth management, the risk management, capital appreciation. It's also finding ways to keep more money in your pocket. And this is why we stress so frequently, you know, having flexibility in retirement, not just having funds in traditional IRAs or your 401k, putting funds in other avenues that you can take out tax-free or that are going to limit the income tax consequences, because all these things add up over time. And that, this can be, you know, quite a bit, especially if you get to that 491 mark.
Now, a lot of people tell me, well, I'm not going to hit that first tier, right? So if I'm an individual and I'm going to make more than $87,000, you know, again, I might, these tiers that I'm looking at based on my income, people say, well, I'm never going to hit that. I'm not. I'm just not. Well, and I get it. There are going to be a lot of people, their IRMA surcharges, that they're not going to hit these tiers, and they're not going to get additional costs onto the 140-460.
But, Rich, but you know typically how this happens, right? Maybe that you're not going to take this on a regular basis, but maybe you have to take more money out of something. Maybe you have a family member that needs help, or you have an emergency.
Uh-huh.
And now you need to take these funds out.
What are you saying, Danny? It's not just what I earn. It's what I take out of my IRAs, right? My
absolutely.
Tax deferred account. So,
it's going to include your Social Security. It's going to include any different types of income that you have. So you may say, hey, we have to meet this emergency need. And it's more than I don't want to take these funds out of my savings account. So you pull it from your 401k, your IRA, these taxable accounts. And essentially what happens is, it's going to bump you up over that $85,000 or $87,000 mark for this next year. Or if you're a couple, $170,000 to $174,000, it is increasing. And why this is important is because this is going to impact your Medicare. And what happens is they look back from a two-year time frame. Now, you do have the ability to go in and actually appeal it, depending on what type of circumstances it is. Mm-hmm. But if you're just taking money out to take money out, they don't care if you're giving it to Uncle Joe because he needs an additional funds and you know, he's about to go bankrupt. It doesn't matter where those funds go in that instance. So we have to be very careful surrounding that.
Because people believe, and it's and again, we don't talk about it a lot. We do, but a lot of advisors don't, that if there is a need and life gets in the way and all my money, because we're told in the financial industry, is place it in your tax-deferred accounts. If all my money's in there and I take enough money out, I'm going to trigger a repercussion of other charges that I am not aware of possibly, and that includes a higher bill for my Medicare premiums. So it's very, very important to diversify your accounts. In other words, think about it. If you lived on a farm and you only had one cow to go to for milk, maybe I want three. Maybe I want my tax-deferred cow. Maybe I want my brokerage or taxable cow. And I want my Roth cow where I can blend. Wouldn't it be nice if I had a cow that made chocolate milk, one that made strawberry, and... Okay, that's a whole other thing I got to think about next week. But the point is, we will help you look at those Medicare decisions. I helped somebody yesterday to help get through the maze of Medicare, so just reach out to us.
That's right.
We are happy to sort of make sense of it all
for you. And I know there's a lot of people right now who aren't on Medicare, and you're thinking, this doesn't pertain to me. But it does, because right now is the time that you need to be thinking about how you can prepare for this. But when you do get to 65, you have that flexibility. So, hey, thank you guys for joining us today. You've listened to The Real Investment Show, Financial Fitness Friday edition with Rich Rosso, Danny Ratliff. Lance will be back on Monday. Y'all have a great weekend.
It's a rich man's world.